Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Hello everyone and welcome to the first TSFP of the season. I'm Phil Kitramalides, joined as ever by Sid Lowe. Sydney, it's our 10th season doing the podcast. It's a milestone. How are you feeling at the start of our 10th season, Sid?
I'd forgotten what Mondays were like. I'd gone a little while without doing Mondays. And the Monday, obviously largely because Sunday nights always finish so late, and last night in particular finished very, very late. But yeah, it's good. It's quite exciting.
Yes, good.
I felt like there was a lot that happened this weekend, and a lot that was quite fun, and a lot that made you think, we're back.
We are back. We're very, very much back, and we're very delighted to be here because, yeah, we get a little bit exhausted during the season, particularly Sydney, who's on his knees when it comes to the end of the campaign. And then a couple of days later, he is itching for the football to return. So it's returned, and you're back in your natural habitat, Sydney, which last night was the Coliseum Alfonso Pérez. Anyway, we'll get onto that in just a moment. As we said, TSFP is back for the new season. We'll be bringing you the latest from La Liga every single Monday for free right here on this Monday feed. If you want more, head over to patreon.com/TSFP. Patrons get the Monday pod ad-free, a Q&A pod on Tuesdays, a bonus pod on Thursdays or Fridays. Plus, there's TSFP Presents, Rincón Cultural, the TSFP Discord, Zoom calls with us, and Al's paper reviews. Join us. If you sign up for the year, you get 10% off. So come and join us at patreon.com/TSFP. This is what happened then on match day one of the 23-24 campaign. Friday night saw the mighty Rayo Vallecano get things off to a brilliant start by beating Almeria 2-0 at the Power Horse Stadium. Issy Palazón scoring the first goal of the season from the penalty spot. Randy Inteca scored the second, also a penalty for the mighty Rayo. Valencia pulled off something of a shock by going to the Europa League holders, Sevilla, and beating them by 2-1. We'll talk a bit about Valencia, but they're a very, very young squad. The youngest squad in the division, possibly the worst Valencia squad in living memory, and yet they produced a pretty vibrant performance to beat Sevilla 2-1. Then on Saturday, Real Sociedad and Girona played out a 1-1 draw. It was the same scoreline between Las Palmas and Mallorca, and Real Madrid went up to Bilbao, to the Catedral San Mamés, and beat Athletic Club by 2-0. Rodrigo and Jude Bellingham scoring on his debut. On Sunday, the Rafa Benitez era at Celta Vigo got off to a losing start. It was sold out at Balaidos, but they were beaten 2-0 at home by Osasuna. Real Betis beat Villarreal 2-1 at the Estadio de la Cerámica, a 95th minute winner from William Jose. Isco made his debut and played really well as well for Betis. And then Sunday night football, and we use the word football in the looser sense of the word, was Getafe 0, Barca 0, a game which has given us a lot to talk about. Monday night football, there's two games, so obviously we can't talk about them. Cadiz Alaves and Atleti against Granada. We have to start then, Sydney, by the game you were at last night and very nearly this morning. Getafe 0, Barcelona 0. It was a 9:30 kickoff. It finished at 9:45. The game. This game, which has given us, as we said, lots for us to talk about. There are footballing aspects that we absolutely want to discuss because it was, you know, there was plenty for us to talk about from Barcelona. It was the debut of Ilkay Gundogan, debut of Uriel Romeo as well. But we have to start with the general sensations from this game. 26 minutes of added time in total. I think it was 10 at the end of the first half, 9 at the end of the second half, which ended up being 16 because of a pretty long VAR review. More on that in a minute or not. Xavi afterwards said it is a disgrace. If this is the spectacle that we want to sell for La Liga, it is a disgrace. There were some pretty forthright words from him and the Barca players who weren't happy at all.
Yeah, and just to start with the time, which I think is possibly the most sort of significant element in terms of kind of trying to sum it all up. What this does for me, and this is a much broader debate, is I think it underlines that the idea that you just add time doesn't necessarily resolve the issues you're confronted with, which is the flow of the game, the amount of time that's wasted. If you look at the statistics from last night, you get, what is it, 116 minutes, nearly 117 minutes, of which, according to Opta, although I've actually seen another stat which is even lower than this, but let's go with the Opta stat because I suspect it's the one that's most likely to be correct. According to Opta, the ball was in play for 60 of them. So that's a lot of time, the ball not in play, a lot of time, almost 60 minutes, almost an hour's worth. Now, actually, if you look at it like that, you look at 60 minutes, that's quite a good number. Because more than a lot of games have, a lot of 90-minute games used to have. And so you could say, well, actually, that dealt with the issue. The amount of minutes the ball was in play was about right. And certainly those people who defend the idea of we should have, instead of a running clock, a stopping clock, most people pitch the amount.
Xavi being one of those.
Yeah, most people pitch the amount at around about an hour. And so you could say, well, so in which case, that part of it is fine. But I think actually what we saw last night is that part of it's not. And this is, as I say, this is a broader debate and one I maybe want to get into properly on another day. But it makes me think, you see, this shows us that it's not just about whether or not you get those 60 minutes. Mm. It's about what the flow of those 60 minutes is. It's about when they happen. And it's about as well, and I don't want to sound like someone who doesn't want to be in the Coliseum Alfonso Pérez until near midnight on a Sunday. It's also about the whole thing. You don't want games where, and I'm going to use the sort of the Simpsons line, won't someone please think of the children? You don't want games when people are in the stadiums at that time of night. You don't want the game not having a kind of a contained time. And I think that actually shows that last night, and I understand Xavi's point and I understand lots of people's point about trying to have a stopping clock because they think it would remedy things. My suspicion and my fear, much as I myself have often thought, actually a stopping clock would do this, is that it wouldn't work. And obviously, why does this happen? And it happens because, and here we get back to the stuff that's really about us and about last night's game, because this isn't a product of a set of freak circumstances. This isn't because there was a long VAR review, because actually last night's VAR review, it took them a long time to even go to the VAR, but it actually wasn't very long. It was only about a minute and a bit. There weren't very many stoppages that involved VAR during the course of the game. There wasn't big injuries. What happened last night was a product of a way of playing. A product of an approach. And that's what I think is significant here, is that the response to this happened because Getafe wanted it to happen. And I think that's where the big debate comes here, which is who holds responsibility for it and how do you deal with it? Because, you know, Getafe's shithousery, which I think at times was being exaggerated, but last night surely wasn't. Right? It was really, really quite
something. I mean,
you
were there watching it firsthand. It was pretty...
well, let me tell you something about being there.
Brand. Yeah.
Yeah, let me tell you something about being there, actually, which I think is probably a worthwhile point. I have said lots of times, we've talked about this with various teams, not just Getafe. Quite often when a game seems to be very niggly and very dirty when you're watching it on telly, when you're in the stadium, you don't feel like that because you're not seeing those little details. You're not seeing the little elbow in the ribs or the little confrontation or the little word or the grab of a shirt and all of those kind of things. And so actually in the game, you often think, well, it didn't seem that dirty to me. And then you listen to someone who's watched it on the television and they've seen loads of it. And I tend generally to lean towards the idea that in the stadium, you get a better view of what it's actually like, even if you're not seeing those details. Last night was one of those where even in the stadium, you felt, wow, this is really being stopped a lot. This is really, you know, there's some serious shithousery going on, in particular Damian, but then, you know, he's kind of this cartoon character. But I do think there's a slight risk that we cartoonize Getafe. And sometimes I think that means we exaggerate how bad they are. And at other times, I think instead of dealing with how bad they are, we sort of laugh at it. And I must admit, I'm guilty of that as well. Sometimes I watch it, I think, this is really funny. Yes. And it sort of is. And actually, genuinely, it sort of is sometimes. But it also sort of isn't. And there were times last night you actually thought, you know what? You don't really want this, do you?
No, I mean, there was a sort of existential question being proposed about, you know, the product of Spanish football, and is this what we want to sell to the world?
That's a good question, and I'm glad you framed it like that, because I probably wouldn't have got round to it in those terms, but I think it's a good way of framing it. And I think that's broadly true, and there is that thing about what are we trying to watch, and Xavi's right that if you want to have a spectacle, this doesn't look very good. But I think there's a problem here. And I think there's two problems. One is that Xavi was effectively saying, La Liga have to sort it out and referees have to sort it out. And there's a bit of me that thinks,
Yeah, but how easy is it when a team sets out to play this way to stop it? I don't know how easy it is. I think some of it you can
evidently
do.
Evidently, it's very difficult for Barcelona, who haven't scored in over 4 hours at the Coliseum.
And that's the other thing. And that's a footballing part of it. And of course, he's talking about referees in the league. The other thing is to turn that argument completely on its head is to say, well, do we blame Getafe? Do they have a responsibility to play well? No, they have a responsibility to compete. And if they think this is the way, then they're going to push it. And in fact, it was interesting because even last night, Xavi, who was furious, didn't really go for Getafe. He went for La Liga.
He went for La Liga. He went for Javier Tebas saying that this is allowed.
Yeah, he went for those people that I think you could probably refer to as the enablers. Mm. And actually, Frankie de Jong did that. I mean, post-game yesterday, Frankie de Jong said something like there was 30 minutes wasted. He said, but I don't blame... He actually said explicitly, I don't blame Getafe. They're going to play like that, but someone has to draw a line. The thing is, drawing a line's not that easy. And I think that sometimes we tend to think, well, you've got to stop every foul then and blow a whistle for every foul. And I think that misses the point because I think a team like Getafe that wants to break up the flow actually quite welcomes all the fouls being given. And there's another thing here. And I was thinking this last night with Damian. Damian got booked in the 81st minute.
That was quite funny.
On one level, it is quite funny, right? Because he could have been booked four or five times in there. But for a referee to book you, you've got to see it. And then people say, but what about the VAR? Very few of Damian's fouls off the ball, the little digs, the little nudges, the little cutting across someone's path, sort of accidentally on purpose bumping into them, the little comments. Very few of those are direct red offences. In fact, virtually none of them are.
And the
VAR cannot intervene to give him that yellow. So the referee has to see it. And the referee's trying to watch a lot of things. And so I come back to this in where it's difficult because responsibility is Getafe's because they play this way. But I also understand that, well, of course they play this way because if it works. I think there is... All right, one of the things, and it comes back to the timekeeping thing, but I think it's applicable to last night. We tend to have this idea that says now with the added time, well, carry on time wasting because I'm just going to add it on at the end.
Yeah.
And I think that's conceptually wrong. I think the mentality shouldn't be carry on time wasting, we'll add it at the end. It should be don't time waste. It should be a player's on the floor pretending to be injured. Tell you what, the other team, you can take your free kick now. Take it. Let's get on with it. And he'll get up in a minute. In fact, he'll get up in 1 second if you carry on. you know, a player time wastes a couple of times. Doesn't matter if it's 5 minutes into the game. Yellow card comes out. Don't risk doing it again because it will be red. Now, I don't really like authoritarianism in referees, but some of those things I think can help. Obviously, VAR hasn't helped with this. But again, this is Getafe's approach to the game. And I will admit, at times I've defended Bordalas. I kind of almost defend him last night. I think what he's achieved as a manager is extraordinary. I do think at times it's funny. I also do think at times that we overplay it and he's been kind of tarred and given a reputation. But just because it's exaggerated doesn't mean it's invented. And he has created this. And when he acts the victim, that's not entirely true either.
All right, let's talk about the actual football then. It was a game in which we saw Ilkay Gundogan and Uriel Romeo playing their first competitive fixtures for Barcelona. I must say, watching Romeo, I don't know what the idea you got in the stadium was. He didn't look out of place for me in the heart of the Barcelona midfield. I thought he had a really quite good, quite a decent debut.
Yeah, I thought he had a decent debut as well. I thought his positioning was good. He was on the ball quite a lot. What I would say I think is missing from him, or was missing from him last night, but I think this was all of them, and let me come on to Barcelona's midfield more generally in a minute, which is part of Romeo, is that when you look back at how Busquets played that role, one of the things we sometimes overlooked was how quickly he would release the ball and play a pass that cut a line out. And maybe do it very simply, so simply that you didn't notice it. And I think Romeo maybe doesn't do that as often, but I thought he was pretty good in a midfield that was very static, and this is where I get onto the next point of this. I'm going to name drop just because, you know, because I want to contextualise this. Because I was doing this game for ESPN last night, I watched the game with Luis García. And whereas normally we'd be sitting pitch side,
the one that drinks sangria.
Yes, I hate to report that yesterday he did not. Rather than watching pitch side, we actually went and sat in the stands where you get a much better view. And it was really, really interesting listening to him, who of course played at Barcelona, and understand some of the mechanics. Listening to him talk about space and movement and the way that players moved, and essentially watching Barcelona in the first half. And no one making the kind of runs that open the thing up. And I sort of asked him at one point, you know, when it's all static like this, someone's got to do the first run for everything else to sort. Because he was saying, you know, that guy goes there and then that pulls that and then a guy goes into that space. And then when that happens, the other team's got to step out and then you can go and beyond. And all of these things that kind of became kind of, what would I call it? Self-perpetuating, I guess, right? Or self-dependent. Mm. And I said, so who makes the first move? He said, you've got to have the movement from everywhere. And he says, no one's doing it. And he said, the guy that's wide, for example, has to make that run even though he's not getting the ball. And again, and again, and again, and again. And it's not happening. And all the way through the first half, it wasn't happening. And so you had Romeo with the ball, but very, very little movement in front of him. I thought Gundogan had a really poor first half and a really quite good second half. Mm-hmm. And throughout the team, and as I say, you know, we could all see that it was static, but it was really interesting listening to someone who understands the mechanics of it. There were moments in the game we said, right, now do the run. Even if you're not going to get the ball, now do the run. And it wasn't happening. Now come inside. Mm. Now break the line. Now go longer so that the defence is forced to go back and then that opens the space in front of them. Or now come short so the defence is forced to come with you and it opens the space behind them. And it just never really happened. The couple of times it did, of course, was Rafinha over the right, sort of inside right corner. A couple of times he got in. But it just didn't really happen for them. And I don't know if that's partly because there's an awareness that Getafe are snapping at you. One of the things that we maybe overlook when Getafe play like this is they're incredibly well organised. And it's genuinely quite impressive what they do, even if we don't like looking at it. And I thought Barcelona were really, really poor in the first half.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Just a sort of cultural thing. Can you confirm these late kickoffs? 9:30 kicked off. The halftime after 10 minutes would have been about 10:20, 10:30. Were there people eating sandwiches wrapped in tin foil at halftime?
Yes, there were.
Of course there were. Right, okay. Even with these late kickoffs. Even with the late kickoffs as well, obviously. This is Spain. Let's move on. We'll head up to Bilbao and talk about what happened at the Catedral, at the Cathedral at San Mamés between Athletic Club and Real Madrid. You were there also to witness Real Madrid really put in a pretty impressive performance, and Athletic Club put in a really quite dreadful performance. Mm. Yes, Real Madrid were good, but they were up against an utterly insipid Athletic, particularly in the first half. I think I can't remember which one of the Athletic players was speaking afterwards, and he said the manager changed three of us at halftime, but he could have changed all 11 because we were absolutely rubbish. Rodrigo scored the first goal, well taken. The second one was from Jude Bellingham, and the papers here were absolutely cooing over Jude Bellingham. AS, the day after, had the headline, El Jefe es Bellingham. Bellingham is the boss. You know you've had a good debut when the Madrid press are quite so gushing over you, although we know how fickle they are, and if he has a bad game next weekend, it won't be the same story. But he was really, really good to watch on TV. You were there. Pitch side, were you pitch side for this game?
No, I was up
no, okay,
the top.
All right, but still, you got an idea. You know, you got an idea of him in the flesh. And I was just impressed by his sensational work rate. If you see his touches map, it is literally all over the pitch. He touched the ball consistently all over the pitch. It was very, very impressive. He dropped deep to help out defensively when he had to. He had some exceptionally skillful runs as well. And perhaps people don't realise, or maybe I didn't realise, just how skillful he is. He's not just someone who's physically strong, who can run, who can drive with the ball. He is unbelievably good with the ball at his feet as well. And okay, it's just been one game, but it's exciting to see a player like this.
Yeah, and I like the headline as well, because I think the key is that you use a word like boss. You're not saying just this guy is very good. You're saying this guy takes responsibility and he leads. And I think in the stadium, that was the thing that was most striking to me. In fact, you know what? I'll be honest with you. The first 15, 20 minutes or so, when he was maintaining that position off the front two, the top of the diamond, and then a couple of times he came deep, and I suppose one of the ways to express it is to say that he quite often started and finished the same move. That happened a few times. And actually there was a couple of times in the first half, in the first half of the first half, basically just before he'd scored, when I thought to myself, do you know what? I like him more coming from deep than when he's at the top of the pitch being the number 10. because I like him when it feels like he's covering more of the pitch, when it feels like he's making things happen rather than waiting for things to come to him to then make them happen at the top of the pitch. I completely understand the idea of getting him as close to possible as goal. I think one of the beauties of him is that you can have him do everything. And this comes back to that really nice story about the coach when he was at Birmingham giving him the number 22, because I'm going to get the maths wrong here. Let's hope I get the right numbers, because he was a number 10, a number 8 and a number 4 all put together. Is that the right numbers? Yes, it is. That's 22. I almost said 6 instead of 4, which would have made 24, wouldn't it? But 8 and 4 is 12, plus 24. 10 is 22.
That's
24.
That's 22.
So his number was 22.
Yeah, but 10 plus 8 plus 6 is 24. 8
plus 4. Yeah. No, exactly. That's what I say. I was going to say 6, but it's actually 4. Okay. That's why it's 4. Okay. Right. So it's an 8 and a 4 and a 10, all in one package. And I think that's right. There was that moment in the second half. We did that incredible run up the right, from deep in the right-hand side. He looks like a brilliant athlete, but there's grace with it. And as you say, the touch on the ball is fabulous. I thought a nice little debate on the radio when one of the commentators was saying, he's like Zidane, and all the others kind of leapt on him. I said, oh, come on, not like Zidane. And actually, I thought it's not so far off.
But does it like the big, strong, skillful, but at the same time physical as well? Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. You know, a guy that's sort of, I know, good touch for a big man is a cliche, and it's obviously not often true. But there is something about someone who has the physical presence and that kind of capacity to have a very soft touch on the ball, to move it very well, reasonably two-footed. Sees passes, is good with the ball at his feet in terms of getting away out of tight spaces. I genuinely watched him at the weekend and thought, it was funny because, this is going to sound really stupid, here we are raving about him. I felt like it was a kind of a, how do I say this? It was sort of low-key at the same time as being absolutely brilliant. In the sense that he didn't curl a belter into the top corner. He didn't go around six men, although that one run was really outstanding. It wasn't like you're saying, wow, look at him spraying these Hollywood passes all over the place. It was just that kind of everything was right and everything carried with it the feel, and this comes back to that, using that word jefe, the feel of it's all right, I'm here, I've got this, I'm in control of this. The feel that he wanted the ball all the time, but not just that, but his teammates wanted him to have it. So yes, we'll play it through him, we'll give it to him, he'll go and take responsibility. A couple of times people lost the ball, teammates lost the ball, and he's the one making the tackle to win it back. He's the one doing the header to get the ball clear. He's the one sliding in. The first two things that he did that were really kind of individual moments that you think, wow, that was good, were both slide tackles. I think both on Nico Williams as well. At least one of them was. And you're looking and thinking, okay, well, there's the Bellingham defender, even though he's playing at number 10. And then, as you say, by the end, you look at the heat map, and the heat map is all over the place. I thought there was a real assuredness to him, which I think, you know, I don't want to overplay the symbolism, but, you know, let's do it because this is sort of the nature of the way we kind of take an image and play with it and kind of build from it. But even the way he celebrated the goal kind of said, this is a man who's at ease, who's liking this, who's got the confidence to say, all right, I'm here.
Apparently that's how he celebrates goals. It's a sort of a celebration that
he's done. Yes, he always has.
Yeah. He stands with his arms open. In front of the crowd. Yeah.
They just sort of said, here we go. And he had Mounain and Williams sort of have a word with him. In fact, Williams actually went over to him and said, look, come on. And he sort of turned away from him and smiled, not in a kind of up your sort of way. But I think A, there wasn't really a sense that, oh, these are the hardcore. And then I actually think there wasn't really a sense that he cared very much one way or the other.
I think he didn't care at all. And nor should he. Grande Jude. And, you know, We are a little bit biased. We want to see him do well because we want to see all British players that come to Spain do well. So he started off pretty well. What do we think about Real Madrid signing Kepa, Sid? Because Thibaut Courtois got injured. He's done his cruciate ligaments. He's going to be out for the vast majority of this season. So they've announced today the signing on loan from Chelsea of Kepa Arrizabalaga. My initial thought is, if you're trying to substitute the best goalkeeper in the world, which for me Thibaut Courtois is, then Kepa is a pretty good option late on in the transfer window, completely unexpected. To be able to do this deal, it seems like a pretty good option given some of the other names that were being mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's the thing, isn't it? You have to put this into its context. The context is 2 days before the season starts, Courtois gets the injury. You're not planning for this. You haven't got a backup goalkeeper who you really think is the guy that you would like to be playing if Courtois is missing. You know, if it's once or twice, fine, but not for a whole season. I think if you look at it like that, this is why my answer is slightly contradictory. You look at this and you think, well, what's available out there? What's relatively cheap? Who's a decent goalkeeper? This is as good a solution as any. Bono was one solution, but he's got the African Cup of Nations, so you're talking about 12 games that he misses. He probably costs you 20 million euros. There's a handful of other options. I don't really understand why David De Gea hasn't been talked about, but I can only assume that his salary is really high. And so Kepa makes sense. The bit that's contradictory for me is, and I'd like Chelsea fans to tell me the answer to this, I'm not sure he's that good.
Mm.
And I suppose we're about to find out if he is or not.
Mm. He's had an up and down time at Chelsea, I think it's fair to say. I think he played quite a lot last season, but the couple of seasons prior to that, he didn't play too much. And there's obviously that famous image of him and Mauricio Sarri in the final of the League Cup a couple of years ago, him refusing to come off for the penalty shootout. I mean, that shows quite a bit of personality. And I think you do need a lot of personality and character to play as Real Madrid's goalkeeper. But you need a lot of character anyway to play at Real Madrid and to deal with the pressure and the spotlight to be the goalkeeper. I would say it's even more so, it's heightened. So, yeah. Let's see. We'll see. You're absolutely right. Let's see if he's that good. I think on paper, though, it is in theory a good signing.
It's a logical choice, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't really know, as I say, until we see him in this environment, until we see him often, because I hadn't seen enough of him at Chelsea. But I've never been completely convinced. And even when he left Athletic, when I thought he was very good indeed, and I think people at Athletic thought this, they felt that he'd gone too soon.
Mm. Yeah.
They felt that, oof, that's great money for us.
Yeah. Real Madrid losing Eder Militao. He's out for a long time as well. He's also done his knee ligament, so that's going to be a really big blow as well, isn't it? Losing their goalkeeper and their best defender.
Massive. My throat's going very funny. Massive blow for them. Yeah. And their initial idea, Real Madrid, is not to replace him. I must confess, I don't know enough about Castilla. I don't know if there's a central defender there that would be
they've got Rudiger and Nacho in
the first team, so there are players there that can replace him, but it does seem a little bit short.
Yeah, potentially a little bit short. Let's see how they get on this season without Militao and without Thibaut Courtois. We should talk about Valencia as well. That magnificent victory for them away at Sevilla on Friday night, beating the Europa League holders by 2-1. The winning goal was scored by Javi Guerra late on, not for the first time. You remember his winner against Valladolid in April, which went a long way to keeping them up. The opening goal was scored by Mukhtar Diakabi, who was playing in central midfield. Didn't see that one coming. But you know what? I was watching this Valencia performance and I thought they gave it a real go. There was no sense of negativity. And we'd been at Mestalla the weekend before the season started, and it didn't feel like a particularly happy place. There were chants against the board, as there have been. There were some whistles against some of the players as well. And then there was support for the team when they were going forward, but it just felt like this is not a happy place. The players went out against Sevilla on Friday, and they took the game to them. There was no fear, there was no nerves, there was no, oh my God, we're starting a season and we've got a really short squad and, you know, there was none of that. Fran Perez, Diego Lopez, they were both in the starting 11, both really vibrant down the wings as they always are. Hugo Duro is not a good enough number nine for someone for Valencia. You know, I'll say that again, but he led the line pretty well for them against Sevilla. And this is a massive, massive result. And once again, Sydney, the kids getting Valencia out of trouble at the start of the season.
And this was exactly what we were talking about, wasn't it, during the summer and after we'd seen them in pre-season. That idea that this depends on these kids being genuinely good. And in the case of Javi Guerra, we think he is. In the case of some of the others, I think we still have to see just how good they are. And I think that attitude really matters. And it does suggest you, and actually Mendel Ibar had said this, talking about when he was asked about his opponents, he says, it's the kids at the club at Valencia that truly believe in what the manager wants to do. And they're the ones that will force it through. Now, obviously then there's a talent element. And of course there is. And that's the fundamental thing in any team, are the players good enough? But if you get that momentum and you start to get some of that talent to show itself on the pitch, then that will be the key to them surviving. I still agree with you. I still think we shouldn't be looking at this and thinking, wow, they're absolutely going to be fine.
No.
But it's a very good early start.
No. I think they're still going to struggle. Let's talk again at the end of the transfer window, because they absolutely need to bring in some people, because they have lost Edinson Cavani, Yunus Musa, Samuel Lino, Nico Gonzalez, Ilaish Moriba, some really important players, and they brought in Pepelu, a midfielder from Levante. He's a good midfielder, he's a good player, but that's it. Haven't brought anyone else in. They need to strengthen this squad. Let's see if that happens.
Yeah,
and then I think we can assess them in terms of their.
In fact, let's be honest about it. When you see Diakabi in the middle of midfield, you wonder if this is partly Baraja saying to the club, "Look, I'm playing him in midfield."
Yeah, I called
that
it.
That tells you that we need someone there.
I called a cry for help on our WhatsApp group, didn't I?
Yeah.
But then he popped up and scored a goal. So there we go.
Yeah. So, what do we know?
Yeah. Isco started for Betis. And he actually played pretty well, Sydney. I mean, I didn't see all of this game, but I saw some extended highlights. And he was involved in a lot of good things that Betis created. He was involved in the first goal as well. And he looked like an actual footballer, Sid. Like, we hadn't seen Isco. Okay, yeah. Last season with Sevilla, he played okay. You know, he was...
Yeah.
But this time, it was back to being creative at the heart of good stuff in the final third. And it's exciting to see.
Absolutely. And look, I would argue and have argued that I thought he played all right at Sevilla last year. I thought that he was one of the few players that looked like he was doing something during a period when the whole thing was collapsing. But it's true that he, even then, he looked a little heavy. He doesn't look heavy now. I think talent-wise, he's obviously a fantastic player. I think he's with the right kind of manager. I mean, he is the embodiment, if you like, of a Pellegrini player. Someone who might normally play in a wide position, but basically be coming inside all the time, always playing, keeping the ball short, keeping the game sort of slow to then speed up rather than playing through quick transitions. Someone who's got good players around him, and in the first half in particular, he combined well with Luis Enrique, who, by the way, just before the goal, had like a 5-minute spell when he just... Poor old Alberto Moreno, he just kind of kept going at him and kept taking him to bits. And I thought he played really, really well as well. And it's really pleasing. And I think it's the right environment for him. I guess the question is, does this get maintained? Pellegrini talked about the desire for revenge, if you like, or the desire to prove a point that Isco had and how that might fuel him. And I suppose the question is, how long does that last? And how long does that fuel him for? And is there a point at which he starts to think, oh, I'm back now? And then maybe gets comfortable. But I think if he's playing consistently, this is one of the things we forget about Real Madrid, is he didn't play consistently. So when he did get the opportunities, he'd come from a long period of not really playing, with probably deep down a feeling that he wasn't going to get the chance to continue in the team. And so maybe this is the right environment for him. We were saying in the summer, weren't we, this could be absolutely brilliant or it could fall apart. I really hope it's the absolutely brilliant option.
He started 47 league games in 5 years. Isco prior to this season. He has not played a lot of league football at all.
Exactly.
Let's see how he gets on, but it was a positive start for him and Los Verdi Blancos with that late winner scored by William Jose. Before we go, let's mention the Segunda División, a good start to the season for Valladolid. They beat Sporting 2-0. Not so much for the other two relegated teams. Elche were beaten 1-0 at home by Racing Ferrol, and Espanyol were held to a 1-1 draw by Albacete. Racing Santander beat Eibar 4-0, and Levante drew 1-1 at Amorebieta. Oviedo get there. This time it's definitely happening. Season underway against Tenerife this evening, Sydney. The Women's World Cup, congratulations to Spain. They're in the semi-finals for the first time ever after beating the Netherlands 2-1 on Friday. They're playing Sweden in the semis tomorrow. And Sid, you're convinced they're going to win the tournament?
They're going to win it. They're going to win the World Cup.
Okay. Why?
Just because they are.
Okay, because they are. Fine.
For what it's worth, I genuinely haven't seen a team play better than them, apart from maybe Japan against them.
Okay. Well, let's see. It would be magnificent, because we have yet to experience, Al and I, any national team glory since we moved here 11 years ago. So let's see.
Are you not counting the men's team? What do you call it? Final four of the Nations League?
Are we? I guess we are.
Not, no, are
maybe we?
We
are.
I don't know.
it felt perhaps a little bit underwhelming to the three-peat of the €2 in the World Cup. And, but anyway, good luck to the women's team tomorrow. We will be following their progress and hoping that they get through to the final to face either Australia or England. That's it for the first edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. Thank you very much for joining us as ever. If you want us, we're over at Patreon for the rest of the week, patreon.com/TSFP. If there's something that you want us to talk about and we didn't talk about it on the podcast, send us a question. We will answer it. We'll speak soon, amigos. Adios.
Cheerio.